20 years ago next week, President Ronald Reagan was shot by John Hinckley Jr. Newly released tape recordings made in the White House Situation Room that day demonstrate how government leaders responded to the assassination attempt. In the second part of my interview with Reagan's National Security Advisor, Richard Allen, who made the tapes, he recalls the frantic nature of the day. He and others were eager for any information about the gunman or his motives.
Preliminary investigation.
Get him up to date, and then he can decide what he's doing about going to visit.
No plot, no reason
why the suspect shouldn't have been in the area.
Yeah.
They're conducting a background investigation of him in Lubbock, Texas. He stayed at the Park Central Hotel here, which is one block from the executive office building.
It was late afternoon on March 30th, 1981, a Monday. The president lay unconscious at George Washington University Hospital while doctors operated to remove a bullet from his chest. Vice President George Bush was on a plane flying back from Texas. And at the White House, reporters hurled questions at Deputy Press Secretary Larry Speaks.
Larry, who's running the government right now?
If the president goes into surgery and goes under anesthesia, Vice President Bush become the acting president at that moment, or under what circumstances does he?
I cannot answer
what
that question.
What about crisis management?
Which is technical.
Speak's appearance was a surprise to many gathered in the secure basement Situation Room. Allen, Secretary of State Al Haig, and Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger were among those gathered, trying to keep the government on course. Aware that history was being made, Allen kept a small tape recorder with him at all times.
At that particular moment, I was not in the Situation Room, but had gone to the communication center immediately adjacent. And at that moment, I was approached by Secretary Haig, who said, "You'd better come with me." And I had no knowledge of why we should move upstairs to the press room, as he had suggested.
Took him into surgery.
Why don't you come?
Okay. Yeah. I'll be back with him.
And Haig is saying, "Run, run, run. He's turning this into a goddamn disaster." And I say, "Who has?" Speaks. And I said, "Did he walk in up there?" He said, "Yeah, he's up there now." I said, "Oh, Christ almighty, why is he doing that?"
He's a good attorney. I said, "I'm a goddamn disaster. Who has?" And he walked into the press room and gave him time to speak.
Did he walk in up here?
Yeah, he's up there.
Oh, Jesus Christ almighty, almighty. Why is he doing that?
And then there's, we're going up the steps, you know, the little steps up to the press room there. And then there's confusion. And then this female voice, one of the press assistants, says, "They're coming back again.
They want to know who's running the government."
Oh, well,
just a minute. We'll assemble them.
We're coming back. We're all coming right back again. The Secretary of State. Secretary of State.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to touch upon a few matters associated with today's tragedy. First, as you know, we're in close touch with the Vice President, who is returning to Washington. We have in the Situation Room all of the officials of the Cabinet who should be here and ready at this time. We have informed our friends abroad of the situation, the President's condition as we know it, stable, now undergoing surgery. And there are absolutely no alert measures that are necessary at this time or contemplate.
After his statement, Haig began answering questions with Richard Allen at his side.
Who is making the decisions for the government right now? Who's making the decisions?
Constitutionally, gentlemen, you have the President, the Vice President, and the Secretary of State in that order. And should the President decide he wants to transfer the helm to the Vice President, he will do so.
He has not done that.
As of now, I am in control here in the White House, pending return of the Vice President, and in close touch with him. If something came up, I would check with him, of course.
Haig declined to be interviewed for this report, though his public remarks that day became the most famous of his long military and diplomatic career. He has said his motives were misunderstood, that he was merely trying to reassure the nation and the world. Haig's statement about his authority wasn't the only thing that increased tensions in the Situation Room. He mistakenly said there had been no elevation in U.S. military readiness. Earlier, when movements of Soviet subs in the North Atlantic caused concern, Defense Secretary Weinberger had, in fact, boosted the level of alert.
I've said anyway. I'm not a lawyer. I said there had been no...
Oh, I didn't know you were going up, Al. I think it's...
I had to, because we had the question already started, and we were going to be in a big flap.
Well, I think we could have been a little better if we concerted on a specific statement to be handed out. When you're up there with questions, why then it's not anything you can control. And the
we had just discussed that at the table here, and we said we were not going to increase.
Well, it may not be increasing the alert from a technical point of view, but once you get the additional information, which I got about the one sub being closer than is normal, but not closer than they've been before, then it seems to me prudent to save 3 or 4 minutes.
The National Command Authority was in the hands of the Secretary of Defense, Cap Weinberger, and the actions that he took were very prudent. The press was the job of the press secretary, the chief of staff, and the counselor to the president, Ed Meese. It was not a press function for us to be performing there at the White House.
Well, I'm discussing the point of view that at the moment, until the vice president actually arrives here, the command authority is what... And I have to make sure that it is essential that we do everything that seems proper.
You gotta read the Constitution.
Well,
we can get the Vice President anytime we want.
Vice President Bush soon settled the question when he arrived back at the White House about 7 p.m. A half hour later, hospital officials announced that President Reagan was out of surgery and doing extremely well. Press Secretary James Brady was still being treated for a serious gunshot wound to the head. Some broadcasters wrongly reported that he had died. Richard Allen, for his part, acknowledges the White House mistakes, but he now takes a broader view of those first frantic hours after the assassination attempt.
We did lack information, but then so did the rest of the world, and even the most sensitive parts of the government continued to function as normal.
Why haven't we heard this tape before now? Why are you coming forward with it 20 years later?
Well, I think a 20-year interval is a perfectly respectable one. There's always been stylized versions of this incident, and I hope to incorporate this in a larger work and in more detail because there are many more things that were relevant to the story that day.
Did you run this tape by FBI, CIA, have them listen to it?
No. In 20 years, I think that we've long passed technologically any threats to national security.
Are Weinberger and Haig and all just learning about this now?
Well, I think Cap Weinberger and Al Haig as participants knew exactly what was going on, but I think the tape will refresh their memory. I think that everyone who was in the room at that time, and even those who were not, we'll be able to use this as a new historical starting point because it's accurate. It's not a matter of opinion. It tells the facts and displays the facts as they actually were that awful afternoon, March 30th, 1981.
Richard Allen, National Security Advisor to President Ronald Reagan. His essay on the subject is in the current issue of The Atlantic. That essay and more of this interview is available on the website npr.org.